This podcast is a publication of the Engineering Management Institute, where we are committed to building professional development systems, including project management and people leadership programs that support the growth of engineers and their firms. Download our AE Industry Trends Report for insights on the Great Resignation, remote work productivity, and people-centric cultures. To get your copy, visit engineeringmanagementinstitute.org.
Welcome to this episode of the AEC Engineering and Technology Podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping engineering professionals find technology that fits their needs. I'm your host, Nick Heim, and in this episode, we have the pleasure of speaking with Jameson Morse, Principal and Director of Structures, and Sean Bailey, Lead Software Developer, both with PVE LLC. Together, they'll speak about how software development is revolutionizing AE firms, the impact of AI in our field, and what the future holds for tech in architecture and engineering. With that, let's jump into today's episode. Jameson and Sean, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us. Like I said, I love these tandem interviews, and you guys are definitely a very kind of unique firm in what you're currently doing. So I just want to jump right into this. So for both of you guys to kick it off, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourselves and what your day-to-day roles involve at PVE?
Sure. Jameson Morse, you're at PVE. I am the director of the Buildings and Structures Group. So on the engineering side of things, we are full service architecture and engineering firm, pretty much anything involving building and structure engineering. So structural engineering, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, facade, building envelope, inspections, forensics, anything on that side is typically what falls under my department. And we are located at many offices throughout the country, and I'm the director of the entire group. So we do have regional directors at each place, but I'm kind of at the top of that buildings and structures group and get to interact with all of my team members, which is very, very fun for me.
I lead the software and innovation team within PVE. We are sort of primarily based out of the New York office, although I've been to and work with our engineers and architects throughout the country. So I'm also traveling around and interfacing with folks in different places. But in my day to day, I write code. I build a substantial amount of code. I work on designing and planning tools for engineers, architects that we work with, understanding our processes to see how we can best augment them to make the work we do more efficient. I also work with outside startups in the AEC industry that are sort of producing interesting technology, and we partner with a number of startups where we sort of provide a test audience for them, and they're able to provide their technology to us so we can leverage it within our firm.
Which is, you know, thank you both for the introductions. And like we were talking about earlier, right? So what you guys have kind of put together, this program that involves, you know, essentially custom software development for all the disciplines across the company is, I think, still relatively unique in our industry. And that leads me into my next question. So how did this idea of incorporating software development directly in a multidisciplinary AE firm such as PVE come about, and what was your initial vision for the integration? So I think this is a great question for both of you to chime in on, serving different roles within the company. But Sean, why don't we start with your take on it all?
Yeah, I met Jameson in 2020 because I was instructing at a startup, a code school, and Python, I think, was Jameson's, like, COVID, his lockdown project. And so he had been working on some very simple tools to automate reports and processes, as well as an open data sort of platform for building energy called Property Snapshots. And I was teaching web development and Python and JavaScript. And so Jameson and I really got to talking about that. And I think we both realized that there was a tremendous amount of low-hanging fruit in our industry, so far as applications of technology, applications of software, the efficacy of custom tools. And I mean, Jameson, you can speak to it a little bit more about what it looked like internally before I hopped on. But I started here, I think, coming up on 2 years ago. And I think our vision was exactly this, to build a team to build software for PVE.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one of the big things that really got me started in this and that, picking Sean's brain, which I definitely took advantage of the 1 hour class and then held him on for multiple hours after those classes, and talking about kind of anything and everything. Because, you know, integrating software into our process, what really the main thing I wanted to achieve, which I think we have been achieving and continually develop, is, you know, a lot of the administrative, like day-to-day duties that architects and engineers and professionals in the construction industry have to deal with, that really kind of take you away from, you know, the critical thinking and of, you know, aspects and the designing and kind of the things that we love about our job, right? There's so many areas that just kind of are easy error traps or things that can kind of hang you that are administrative and bureaucratic, where if you could kind of take away some of those layers and have these tools that really help you with that, you can get back to the things that really brought us into this industry. That's the problem solving, you know, the design, the kind of detailing, and allowing yourself to really focus more on the stuff that we're here for and less on kind of some of those administrative burdens. So that's what really kind of piqued my interest initially. And bringing Sean into this equation, it's really taken off rapidly from there. And I'd say we've achieved those goals and much, much more.
Which is awesome, right? Because like we were talking about earlier, this model of in-house custom software development for firms of your guys' size, right? Still relatively new to the industry. And I think you guys could definitely say that you're leaders in that aspect. And I kind of want to start digging more into specifics. So Jameson, based on like what you guys have developed over the past 2 years, what you're seeing in the market, et cetera, what's the most impactful technology trend? And we'll say, is AI a part of this? Is it not, that you see shaping the future of architecture and engineering?
Yeah. And obviously AI has kind of integrated itself into every aspect of our lives. And, you know, with AI, a lot of people say it's, you know, this new thing, but really it's been around for quite a while, and particularly within the AEC industry. A lot of the structural design software that we use is using, you know, AI and help to really optimize some of the structures. And we've been using, you know, versions of this technology with those programs and kind of some of the BIM solutions and stuff for years. But the one thing that we need to always state, and it's something that I think a professor of mine told me way back in school, is, you know, garbage in, garbage out. You know, all of these tools are assistants, but they should assist you in decision making, but they should not be replacing critical decision making or engineering or architectural judgment. So I think what we see a lot of the times is these tools are getting better and better every single day. They're optimizing, they're making some of these decisions, but we still need to make sure that we're trained to understand what decisions they're making. So if they can help speed up something, we need to be able to identify that the decisions that are being made are still within our realm of judgment and our responsibility. And one thing that I see, it's very exciting, all the different areas that can be optimized, but I want to caution kind of some of the younger guys that are coming out of school that are very excited about this stuff to take a step back and realize the nuts and bolts of really what it's doing, because it can optimize, but it can't replace that judgment. And we got to be careful about that.
Jameson, really well said. And what I like to say to people in this, you know, argument or debate about AI is, right, like, you know, artificial intelligence isn't stamping drawings anytime soon, right? And where does that all come back to? The professional judgment by licensed professionals, right? Such as yourself. And like
Absolutely.
You said, it's not being replaced. It's only being augmented, and understanding it for the tool that it is instead of replacement of us, right, as engineers is very critical.
Yep.
And, you know, I'd like to also kind of continue to dig into this topic in particular. And so here's one for you, Sean. So how does an in-house software development team enhance the firm's ability to innovate and deliver custom solutions? And do you have any examples that you'd like to share?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think fundamentally, there is a real tangible material benefit to understanding in a deep way the work that our engineers and architects do. I don't come from an architecture engineering background. I come from a software and from an education background. And I said to Jameson before I started that I want to spend as much time as possible soaking in the actual work that we do. So I've been out on scaffolds for facade inspections. I've been up to the top of the Broadway Bridge up in the Bronx. I've done field inspections. I've shadowed people out on site. And ultimately, I think that there is no substitute for actually understanding the nature of the work that we do. And ultimately, that allows me to understand what I like to think of is the user experience of producing our work product, of producing our drawings or reports or compliance filings or whatever it is our deliverable is for our clients. There are pain points in the experience of that we can address. And so ultimately, at a very basic level, we can capture with software efficiencies and allow our engineers to do engineering and not admin work that is pretty easily automatable. There's also the nature of the fact that we are an industry that lives and dies by the billable hour. And so if we can make things more efficient and we can sort of transform ourselves from a firm that sells time of engineers to clients to a firm where we charge based on the value that we provide to our clients. We charge based on the value of our product that we're providing. And by leveraging technology, we can produce that value in a far more efficient way. I've got a couple of examples of custom software. I think our primary project over the past year, a little more than a year, has been a document automation platform. And I can speak to that definitely a little bit more, but what it allows us to do is to use our existing reports in the formats that we have them, nothing sort of proprietary or closed off, like our existing Microsoft Word reports, and to turn them into automatable, repeatable, templatized, fillable web forms, leveraging a web app. And so we've put the power in the hands of our engineers, who many of them are technical enough to create these reports themselves. And we've sort of allowed all of our engineers and product managers to create these reports and to think in the way of how do I create work product that is easily automatable, that is easily repeatable, templatizable, so we can capture those efficiencies for existing reports and also from the very beginning of new types of work that we're doing.
I love kind of what you laid out, Sean. And the first comment I'll make there is, right, like you've given a great example of that UI UX, which admittedly, right, is a little bit different for architecture, engineering, and construction. Because when you're working with, let's just say, off-the-shelf software, right? No matter what you do, it's going to be rare that the developer of that software is going to put themselves directly in your shoes in any given specific company's processes and procedures, right? But it sounds like you guys can take advantage of being in-house and doing exactly that.
Absolutely.
And the second point is, right, as an engineer, I mean, what you just said about, right, taking those templatized Word documents, right, and pushing it to a web app, it also sounds like now you're just making the job of everybody else easier, not requiring them to, let's say, get bogged down in a Word file and mess with more of the administrative tasks that come with putting an engineering report together, right? So yeah. It just sounds like a win-win to me.
Yeah, I'd say Word formatting, I think I don't think it's specific to our industry. I think Word formatting was just put out there that frustrates pretty much everyone along. You know, you move that one photo half an inch and suddenly your entire thing is reformatted. So the more that we can avoid the time spent just trying to get it back to the way that you wanted it to look and spend that time instead on doing, you know, engineering and architectural tasks, the better. Yeah.
And as you guys know, right, as simple as it sounds, right, a lot of, you know, small, medium-sized firms and probably some of the bigger players too struggle with, it's a Word document. How hard could it be, right? But it's something that if you surveyed 100 design professionals, most of them would say, yeah, it is still something that is very time-consuming.
And the other aspect about that is, you're right, it is extremely time consuming. It's one thing, you know, the quality of the product still matters because you want consistency, and that's still what your deliverable is. It doesn't really matter sometimes how good the engineering and the thought process is behind the product. The way of transferring that knowledge is still your deliverable. So it's your report, it's your drawings, you know, it's the thing that the client actually has. And one little mistake, you know, I mean, how many times have we sent out a document where, oops, I accidentally put the wrong project name, right? I put the wrong client. Like, ooh, those little things immediately undermine your credibility. So the way that we can avoid those error traps and present a document that a client will have confidence in, and it really reflects all the hard work that really went in behind it, instead of kind of immediately flagging some small little administrative thing, the better. And another thing about this too is Sean and I are both very big believers of, there's a book called The Checklist Manifesto. And really, these sorts of, when we convert these documents into web forms, not only does it help, you know, generate a document, but making these required fields, particularly like, say, an inspection report, saves a lot of time, because it's, hey, I'm going to ask you for all of these things every single time, and I'm going to make sure that you answer it. So we have field inspectors running all over the city here in New York, as an example, and we need certain photos every single time they're on site and certain pieces of information. And prior to us implementing the software, it was, you get back to the office, I forgot that one picture, or I forgot that one piece of information. Well, this sort of creates a checklist. And at the completion of the checklist, it generates the document for you. So it really helps streamline the process too, but keeps people on rails, because it's helping them make sure that they're completing the entirety of the process laid out, while also generating a document that's high quality and consistent every single time. So it's not undermining their, you know, the hard work that they put into the process.
Another great example, Jameson, and one in fact that, you know, my day job, right, specialize in parking structure inspection. And one of the things we're experimenting with our, you know, our field technicians is, hey, like, we have a checklist basically based on load path, right? Getting down to each individual element. And it helps because people who may not be structural engineers, right, have this framework to work within, get assisted from the office by our engineers, but it helps them make sure they're not missing anything. And as we were discussing earlier, right, there's something to be said about not having like blinders on and too much focus and kind of losing track of the big picture. But for the most part, right, well-instructed and well-guided, you know, people in the field, young engineers, et cetera, I think it definitely goes a long way. So kudos to you guys, because it sounds like an awesome system.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, Jameson, this one will go back to you. And it made me think of, right, so like report generation, anything text-based, right? AI, large language models have been in the news for, you know, the past year. So my next question to you is, how has AI been integrated into your guys' projects? What challenges or benefits have you encountered? And how has it been going so far?
So yeah, it's a great question. And I think we've been integrating it in a lot of very interesting ways. One of the tools that we use here is a product that Sean's been a part of on the development team, but it's called Turbine. And what they've been able to do is create something that we can store a lot of our documents and things in the cloud. And they've implemented an AI assistant that can kind of help read those and aggregate information, part of a large language model, to present you know, various information back to us that's kind of bespoke to our firm and our materials that we upload into it. So what's really nice about that is, especially at a firm that is kind of multi-regional, multidisciplinary, you know, you don't always know who might have this expertise in other offices, or if we even have this in house. You know, sitting here in New York City, oh, we have this information at Houston, and we have someone to talk to. So aggregating all of this data, it's been really helpful, because not only does it have like ASTM standards and codes and different things that we can ask and kind of interact with our own bespoke AI model, some of these questions. And it can say, hey, you know, you're doing an environmental phase one study. You know, here's some of the documents and here's some of the process. I'm going to quote some of the things that you might want to look out for, and also direct you to some documents. But also, you know, Eric Dreyer in our New York City office is an expert on doing this stuff, because that's, you know, tagged in his profile. Here's his contact information and his link if you want to pop open a Teams message and talk to him. So it does a few different things. One, it gives you the information that, you know, you can help pulling some of these things and relevant code and relevant references. And it doesn't replace the thinking for you, but it kind of serves it up so you can save some of that time from searching of where's the right spot to go for this stuff. But it also connects you and then teaches you a little bit, you know, a lot of team members within the company. Okay, hey, we have these services. This is how we do it. And here is the person within our own company that I can reach out to and talk to. And sometimes that small little thing can save a lot of time and really help the company hum by connecting different people that wouldn't normally be speaking on a day-to-day basis.
Another awesome example, and you know, one that also came to mind, right, and kind of in a similar vein, is like, how many times have you, you know, done a project and like, man, I knew I detailed something like this on a previous project. I just can't remember where it is, right? And I'm sure you guys, right, like, hey, can you help me find this base plate detail from this, you know, CUNY, so on and so forth, right? And it's just those little things, almost like death by a thousand cuts with some of this stuff. And the fact that you guys can develop these bespoke AI models like in-house, tailored specifically to what you do, is of course going to be steps in front of, let's just say, like a ChatGPT. You're paying $20 a month, but right, you kind of get what you pay for.
Exactly. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, that's, you know, having a knowledge repository that's specific to your firm is just so helpful in those kind of applications, because it's just, you know, a lot of the times, even newer people coming out of school, they just want to know where to start, and kind of pointing them where to start of, hey, we've done this before. Here's some examples of where we've gone before. Here's a person that has knowledge in this. Here's some relevant documents and codes and, you know, standards that you should be referencing for this. None of those things replace the actual critical thinking, but it serves it up on a platter so that you're not kind of scrambling around, and it's giving you all the tools right at your fingertips. And I think that's really, really powerful and a really amazing use case for AI within our industry.
And in that specific example, right, with a new grad coming straight out of university, is you might have like a mentor or two, right? And like, hey, go here to find this, and we've done this. Now you have access to the entire firm, right? Like, because you can ask those tailored questions that, right, we're all humans and nobody's going to know everything, but you have what's essentially a large language model to just point you in the right direction.
Yeah. And there is a lot of information at any firm stored in people's heads, and that's the only location that it's stored. And so having a platform like Turbine sort of fully integrated throughout the company allows anyone can create sort of courses or materials or upload resources to the relevant places and have that be sort of ingested by the model. And we can start actually documenting our processes for other folks to spin up on. And that's not just new folks who are newly out of school or newly hired. It's the experienced folks who might be moving to a different office. We have folks that transfer between offices all the time. And it might also be the case that we're starting a new line of service in a different location. We want to be able to leverage like, oh, we're starting to do civil engineering in Houston. We have a massive amount of civil engineering sort of talent and information and processes in Pittsburgh, but short of flying to Pittsburgh or interviewing everyone or being extremely self-motivated, there's no way for that information to make its way across. But now we have Turbine, which sort of serves to make us all sort of functionally closer together from a knowledge perspective.
This is Sean. It's actually a great segue into my next question. So Jameson provided an example in Turbine. Sean, you provided an example of your web application for automation and streamlining of reports. Any other examples of custom development that you guys have put together that you'd like to share with the audience?
Sure. I actually have an example that's sort of a small example of one of the first things that we fully implemented, but we've had an issue, as I'm sure a lot of firms in our industry have an issue with AR and doing work with clients who have a significant amount of AR. And right now, before I came on, our sort of process for requesting new job members, new work, was fairly haphazard and involved a fillable PDF form with that didn't always work super well. And so I sort of took a deep dive. I worked with our project accountants. I worked with some of our project managers and our operations folks, and designed a very simple one-off web form for creating a new opportunity and project. I integrated it directly with our ERP, so we have client data present there. And so the project managers like it because they don't have to look up all of this client information every time to fill it into a PDF. It's just auto-filled. Our project accountants like it because they get email notifications and they can be assured that when someone hits the submit button, they have all of the relevant information filled in. We have solved the problem of not having complete information just by leveraging extremely basic web technologies. Like you cannot submit the form to request a new job unless you upload a signed proposal. And it will say, if you hit submit, you must upload a final design proposal. You must fill out the relevant forms. And that has just smoothed that process out significantly. And it's not the sexiest thing. We've talked about, you know, AI, LLMs, and we've talked about 3D modeling or getting out on site or automation. This is not the sexiest product that we've ever done. It doesn't really involve anything more than a simple full stack web app that integrates into our existing processes. But the impact that it has is really profoundly felt throughout the company. Everyone uses it. It's become the new standard, and it is, you know, significantly moved us towards achieved the goals that it set up. It standardized the process, and it made it easier to decrease things that tend to create severely delinquent AR.
And I think as everybody who has experience in like an innovation program or has one in house, right, that low hanging fruit we discussed earlier, and I'm sure guys like that is probably one of the first, right, even just a small building block, right, solves a problem, gets people to trust in what you guys are doing, trust the technology, and then gives you some more runway to keep building. And whether it's, you know, whether it's the sexy stuff or not, it gives you more opportunity to continue to develop what you've been doing. And speaking of, right, the exciting or the sexy stuff, Jameson, so what exciting developments or projects can we expect to see from your team, particularly regarding new technologies or collaborations within the industry?
So I think that some of the bigger things that we're working on are some of these automation tools. You know, we're really finding ways that we can integrate them into like a lot of our processes and not just help us, but even kind of externally facing with some of our clients with some of the tools that tie directly into some of our products. So I think Sean mentioned, at least particularly here in New York City and some of the other cities we work in, there's a lot of open data that's, you know, out there about a lot of the buildings, a lot of the various compliance and laws and things that you need to report, and then they make that publicly accessible data. Well, it is something that's kind of hard for clients to really wrap their head around because, you know, there are databases, there's things out there. But what we've been able to do is kind of build some of these tools on top of them that deliver clients, you know, relevant information to them, but also help and inform us so that we can provide a better service to our client pretty much instantaneously. An example of this that we've built so far and that we're kind of expanding into is energy. There's a lot of talk out there, you know, now with, you know, the green energy movement, but here in New York City, they actually have a local law where they have limits for, you know, the greenhouse gas emissions that you're allowed to produce prior to actually being penalized by the city if you're above those thresholds. So a lot of times, you know, the first step a client wants to ask is, hey, how's my building looking? And, you know, that takes a little bit of time to figure out. And sometimes you can go through the entire process and say, hey, you're looking great. And they say, awesome, we don't need to hire you. So what we really wanted to do was, and we did this through tool, Property Snapshots, is, you know, we developed a tool where you could type in any building in the city and it would perform that analysis for you. That's step one, just to kind of give you your snapshot of how well your building is performing. And that was beneficial to both the client because they could get the immediate information. We even made it kind of, you could move around various, fuel usages in your building to see how it would affect your performance and your exposure to penalties. But then that also helps us too, because you know, now they're immediately getting that answer, and we're not going down that path of performing those calculations and doing some of that consulting only to arrive at, do you need us, yes or no? You know, we kind of have that answer immediately. And what we have kind of behind the, you know, the scenes with that is we're able to enter an entire portfolio of buildings, and then we're able to prioritize them based upon, you know, what their performance looks like kind of from worst to best. And that helps us as consultants kind of lay out a roadmap for our clients. And it helps both of us kind of not waste our time in areas that we may not be needed because that information was made readily available. So part of those automated tools and access to open data, we're integrating into some of our document automation processes so that, you know, we can kind of start ahead of the game right away with relevant, useful data that's going to really inform that process, which will help us with, you know, proposals, reports, what have you, and really help clients only come to us when they truly need us.
And I've got so many questions about this particular tool, right? But like, and I'm just assuming, right? Let's say it's, you know, this energy use is some function. Hey, here's, you know, the amount of gas you use on a monthly basis based on these records, electric, so on and so forth, right? But I can only imagine trying to do that manually and click by click and step by step, right? But whether your guys' process is exactly kind of going down this path, but being able, you know, to basically tell an owner, or if they're doing it self-serve, like, hey, like, this is your property snapshot, this is where you're at, and we either recommend working with us or checking back in with us, et cetera. I mean, that just has to be huge for your clients, because it sounds like they're spending a lot less time than they otherwise would be coming to these decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And it empowers them too. You know, it's always nice when they can figure out the answer and have a tool available that they can use and play around with themselves. I mean, it just, a lot of our clients in this industry, they're very savvy. You know, they're very hands-on. They're very in the weeds. So kind of providing them tools to kind of get to that stage is extremely helpful. And ultimately, it's helpful for us too, because we're not spending our time kind of on fruitless, expeditions, because they're only coming to us whenever they find out on their own accord that they need us. So yeah, it really cuts both ways, and it's a fun thing to be involved in, and it's continually kind of advancing day by day.
And we can share, certainly I'll link to the Property Snapshots tool. It's up public on the web for anyone to play around with. If any of your work is in New York, or any of our listeners are in New York City, it might be relevant for them to look up buildings that they're involved in. It's also fun to sort of play around with, to look at the energy requirements of the building and the sort of balance and shift. It's a fun tool. We'd be happy to share a link to that, to drop in the show notes or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone, we'll make sure it makes into the show notes. So if you are interested in the Property Snapshots tool, take a look after you're done listening. But, you know, Sean, that's actually another good segue into my next question, right? So obviously, depending on your locale and the region that you're located in is going to dictate what gets developed specific to the needs of the end users there, right? So New York City has a bunch of local laws, and I'm sure there's other examples you could give there. But how do these regional considerations drive the development that you guys do?
That's a very good question. I mean, ultimately, the built environment is something that varies from location to location, just as sort of as a function of geography and of geometry, and, you know, of culture and regulation too. It was extremely revealing taking a ride around Houston, Texas, which is a city that does not really have a formal zoning code. They have things that are sort of adjacent to it, but they have no zoning code. And so I was driving around with the head of our interiors department, who's a Houston native, and we were just driving around her neighborhood. And the incredible diversity of styles and sizes and locations of buildings, just driving around with, just incredibly revealing. And that affects their processes. That affects how architects work and how engineers work, especially with existing buildings and existing neighborhoods. The processes have to be a lot more flexible for doing, you know, construction administration in Houston compared to doing it out here. You also touched on New York. We've spoken a lot about New York local law, and we do a lot of work with that in the software and innovation team, because things that are systematized tend to be easily automatable. It is a lot easier to say you must inspect all parapets on the roof of a building and to design a report and a piece of custom software that ensures that folks are able to do that than to design for a much more general purpose thing. So inspections are very, very easy to automate. And one of the regional differences is that a lot of cities, I'm thinking about Chicago, San Francisco, but we've had meetings with folks in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia about adopting facade inspection regulations that are similar to New York, that have been around in New York for quite a while. We have offices in Pittsburgh and San Francisco, and we've been doing facade work in both of those offices. And as these regulations get rolled out to different regions, as cities look to New York for guidance on how to do safe building practices, we can leverage the expertise and the technology that we've built in-house in New York for our other office.
Excellent. And out here in Cleveland, Ohio area, actually, a parking garage inspection law was just passed, right, based primarily on New York City's local law. So I see exactly what you guys mean, and then the consistency from the expertise you've developed over the years sounds like it translates really nicely when other cities kind of start doing similar things.
And it is important to note the regional, you know, aspect of this is nice, because you can have tools that are adaptable like that, but kind of having in-house software allows us to adapt specifically to the niche of that regional consideration. So it is something like a lot of the big tools, or, you know, it's just a company out there that's kind of saying parking garage inspections, right? It'll be a general software tool that might not hit all of the specific requirements of, say, Cleveland's law or New York or wherever this might be. But being able to have kind of a team in-house, we can say, all right, here's the little unique intricacies of this one that we want to have tied into there so that we make sure our team doesn't miss it. And, you know, same thing over here, where maybe from the back end, they're pretty similar, but we can tweak them to make sure that they fit exactly. And it's not just, oh, we're trying to fit, again, like our process to with whatever tools we have. It's we're actually gearing our tools towards the process that we're creating, so they're exactly aligned.
And, you know, I can speak to this from experience, right? Like, if you're using off-the-shelf software, right, that developer has X number of customers they serve, right? You're not the only one. But when you have in-house development teams, they essentially serve one customer, the company, with multiple stakeholders, of course, right? So it makes it easier to get those feature requests and unique features implemented.
Absolutely.
So, you know, thank you again so much for joining us today. This conversation's been great. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure our audience has as well. But Jameson and Sean, what final piece of advice would each of you offer to engineers looking to effectively integrate software development and technological innovations into their work?
I'll start there. I'd say, you know, no thing is too small to really, you know, take a look at. As Sean mentioned, one of the first things he did was, you know, the project request, and something just kind of fit that bill for us. And it's a small little tweak, and it had such a large impact throughout the firm. And I feel like it's a very common thing within our industry to say, this is just how it is. And if we could only do just one small thing, things would be better. But oh well, you know, it's think a little bit bigger. Think that you can innovate, because there are ways to do that one small thing. And I can tell you from experience, it actually does make it better. So something that, you know, don't be afraid to experiment, and don't be afraid to, you know, to play with these processes. I really think that there's a lot of room for innovation within our industry. And the nice thing about that is, as we innovate, I also think our industry is very collaborative. So, you know, we might be developing some of these tools bespoke to our firm in-house, but when we hit on something big, you know, we're part of these organizations of, like, you know, professional organizations within the industry, and some of these summits that we attend, there's a lot of people with great ideas that want to share those ideas. And I think as a whole, it just makes the entire industry better. And that's something that we all want to strive for.
What about you, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I want to stress the idea that software is ultimately a tool. It is a very, very general purpose tool that can suit a wide range of problems, that can solve a wide range of problems, but it is still ultimately a tool, and tools should serve the people that use them, not the other way around. There are things, even if you're not going to build custom software, if it's that's not realistic right now, there are ways to look at software and processes as how can we choose the tools that best serve the way we want to work, rather than how can we change the way that we work to fit this particular, you know, sexy software tool. Ultimately, a lot of what I do is look at existing solutions and help evaluate it from the perspective of a software developer. If you can take a sort of a software developer's eye, like, are these tools interoperable? Are they open? Do they have the ability to sort of play nice with other things in the ecosystem? Or do they require that they lock you down into something proprietary, something that's extremely on rails, that's bounded, that's going to ultimately limit your freedom to do the kind of work that you want to do in the way that you want to do it? And those are questions you could ask of any potential tool, not just custom tools.
Well said as well, Sean. So thank you again, both for joining us today. It's been, you know, my pleasure to learn more about what you guys are doing over at PBE. But if our audience has more questions, wants to follow up on any of the tools that you guys spoke about or anything else, what's the best way for them to reach you?
I'd say by email. I mean, we can drop the email into the show notes. My personal email, I don't mind sharing, it's jmorse@pve-llc.com.
Yeah, I'd also recommend keep up with me personally and with PVE on social media on LinkedIn. I'll share a link to my personal LinkedIn in the show notes. Feel free to connect. I'm always happy to discuss, and I'm sort of around at AEC technology events in general. And also, check out our website for more information on the innovation work and also the engineering and architecture work that we're doing.
Beautiful. So again, thank you guys so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. And until next time.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you very much.